I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from the Air Force. There's no one.
Yo. And welcome back to The Fix, the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life. Let your ears marinate into the information that stimulates your mind into going into the interpretation of the intellectual grasping of your medulla oblongata around the cortex of your subliminal minding, when the overlapping of the overstanding understands the understanding of the mind that is to be free. My breath. I'm just wildin'. Welcome back to The Fix. I'm your host, your homeboy, Joseph Ward. And you know how we got to do, give you a weekly recap of what happened in the world of sports from a black perspective. Audio, barbershop, you know what I'm saying? You're going to your barbershop, the way you talk to the folk in the shop, that's the way I talk on here. And I'm talking to you. You know what I'm saying? That's how we get down. But before we get more deep into the show, remember, The Fix is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants. And On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips through their African history book series, blog series, nonprofit organization, the African history curriculum app, and they also do educational classes, lectures, speaker series, keynote speaking sessions. The African history curriculum app can be used on your phone, on your tablet. You can access the website, you can access the YouTube channel, everything. African history at your fingertips. They take the stories of sung and unsung heroes and give them to you, and also be able to expose you to African culture from around the world. So for more information, make sure you visit www.ontheshouldersone.com and make sure you get your copy of the books, On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 1, North America, and On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 2. Central America. All right, man. The world of sports, a lot has happened. I got to talk about Jimbo. Of course, I got to talk about Jimbo Fisher, the big headline, Jimbo Fisher leaving Florida State. I'm going to clear up some things about the Gabby Douglas issue with the other young ladies on the Olympic team. So with Allie Raceman and then Simone Biles, because after I recorded my show last week, an article came out exposing more information that I didn't know existed. So I'm going to go back through that. You know, I gotta aim my weekly rant at the damn NFL players. The NFL players are working overtime to prove that they are the house niggas. Not all NFL players. And I will continue to say not all NFL players, especially not Eric Reid, the safety of the San Francisco 49ers. But the majority of the NFL players are really showing that they are the house niggas of the sports world. So, man, enough said, enough teasing. Let's go ahead and get right into it. And, you know, first thing first, I always start off with my HBCU spotlight. So, this week, once again, the University of Grambling State is receiving the HBCU spotlight, but not the football team, the basketball team. All right? So Grambling State upsets Georgia Tech 64-63. So this was December 1st, December 2nd. I think it was more so December 2nd. December 1st it happened. December 1st, Watching SportsCenter learned that Georgia Tech had a last-second shot to pull off the victory against the mighty Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets of the mighty ACC. So let me give you this article. Ivy Smith Jr. put a layup with 8 seconds remaining and missed, but the loose ball grabbed by Curtis Haywood was tipped back into the Tiger basket as Grambling State University's men's basketball team stunned Georgia Tech 64-63 on Friday night at McManus Pavilion, right? Grambling State is 2-5. Grambling State is 2-5, and that was their second victory. They used a 22-8 run to turn a 25-23 halftime lead into a 47-31 advantage with 10 minutes and 19 seconds remaining. Georgia Tech, who's 4-2, they rallied and used a 30-13 run to take a 60-61 lead with a minute and 2 seconds left. The Yellow Jackets got 2 free throws by Jose Alvarado with 43 seconds left, but that would be the last time that Georgia Tech would score. So the last time they scored was 43 seconds left. Smith from Grambling sank 2 shots at the free throw line to cut the margin to 63-62 with 43 seconds left. Tadric Jackson missed 2 shots at the line, and Drake Wilkins came down with a big rebound as Grambling called a timeout with 22 seconds remaining to set up the final play. After the timeout, Smith from Grambling drove the lane, put up a shot, and the ball bounced around and was tipped by Haywood and went into the basket and gave the Tigers a 64-63 lead. And that is how Grambling came away with the victory. It was a close game the whole game. Grambling played Georgia Tech hard the whole game, right? Let me give you some numbers about some of the inside numbers of the game. So Grambling State, they shot 44% from the field, and they shot 66% from the line. They went 8-12 from the line, right? Georgia Tech was they shot 39% from the field and 50% from the line. You're supposed to lose when you shoot 39% from the field. So Georgia Tech wasn't on their game. Basically, Georgia Tech played down to their talent, and they got their ass whooped. But nevertheless, when you do that, you lose. And the lose and the L's and the W's count. And the Tigers of Grambling State once again grab my HBCU spotlight because this is a big victory for them. Now, they are 2-5 on the season, so hopefully this will spark them to win more games moving forward into the season. But for right now, they could bask in the glory of saying that we took down the mighty, mighty Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech this 2017-2018 basketball season. Now, like I said, hopefully that will spur them to have a better season going further down the stretch. So, Grambling out-rebounded Georgia Tech 36-32, and they out-rebounded them mostly on the defensive end. They had 28 defensive rebounds. Georgia Tech had 22. Grambling had 24 points in the paint, 14 points off turnovers, and 13 fast break points. Georgia Tech had 24 points off turnovers, 20 points in the tank, and their bench added 9 points. This game had 4 ties and 8 lead changes, but all in all, in the end, with the tip shot by Haywood, Grambling State came out with the victory over the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech, and you know, it made them feel real good. And you land on the spotlight of the fix because of this victory. Now, I'm not gonna lie, football season is ending and has ended, and I was a little worried about these spotlights, but the HBCUs keep coming through, and they keep doing miraculous things. And every time I know I need my content for my show, some HBCU, somebody from the HBCU world come through and do something that's great. So you know how we do. Our studio audience, we got to give a rousing round of applause to the Grambling State University men's basketball team for coming away with their fabulous victory against the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech University. Give it up. Give it up. Give it up for the Grambling State University Tigers. That's what I'm talking about. It's for you. This is for you. This is for you. This is for you. Yes, 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 yes. Yes. All right. So moving on. We got to move on. So, as I say, headline. The headline in the sports world was Jimbo Fisher. Coach Jimbo Fisher of Florida State University is leaving Florida State to go be the new head coach at Texas A&M University. Now, remember last week when I was talking about Texas A&M maybe firing Kevin Sumner? So, a little bit after I did my show, Kevin Sumlin was fired. And then the next day or a couple days later, the rumbling started. Because I'm here in Tallahassee. I live here in Tallahassee. So the rumbling started that Jimbo Fisher would be leaving Florida State for Texas A&M. Now, to me, football-wise, that's not a good move. Programmatically, that may be a good move for Jimbo because apparently he wasn't getting the support from the FSU administration that he intended to have. On top of being offered $75 million over 10 years, that's guaranteed. Yikes. So that makes Jimbo Fisher the second highest paid coach in college football. He's now eclipsed Dabo Swinney, but he's still behind Nick Saban. And Nick Saban just got a new deal not too long ago itself. So now Florida State is looking for a new head coach. And from my understanding, the coach, I keep forgetting this man's name, but the coach from Oregon, the black guy, the black man who's the coach from Oregon, he's been labeled as a candidate. Kevin Sumlin has been labeled as a candidate, and Charlie Strong has been labeled as a candidate. And that's very interesting that three black head coaches will be labeled as a candidate. So as of right now, Odell Higgins is the interim head coach at Florida State, who's a black man who's been on Florida State staff for a long time. And Florida State just played Louisiana Monroe. They just kicked Louisiana Monroe yesterday, and that was the only game to be played other than the actual conference championships. And I'll talk about conference championships a little later. So let me read this article to you on theringer.com. The college football coaching carousel continues to spin at warp speed. On Friday, Tomahawk Nation and Tallahassee Democrat first reported that Florida State head football coach Jimbo Fisher has agreed to a contract with Texas A&M to replace Kevin Sumlin, who was fired Sunday on the heels of a 45-21 loss to LSU. Per a report from ESPN's Mark Sandbach, the deal is for 10 years, $75 million, which is guaranteed. The news may come as a shock to the casual fan, as Fisher went 83-23 at Florida State, won the Orange Bowl twice, and captured the final national championship of the BCS era after the 2014 season. The Seminoles claimed three ACC titles, 2012 through 2014, under which and produced a number of future NFL standouts, which is Jameis Winston, Devontae Freeman, Kelvin Benjamin, Jalen Ramsey, Dalvin Cook, and amongst others. Don't forget about the young man for the Minnesota Vikings, the cornerback for the Minnesota Vikings. His name escapes me right now. This is not the type of success that coaches typically walk away from. In fact, Fisher's move marks the first time in 40 years that a head coach has left the school where he won a national championship to accept another FBS job. So if he's leaving like that, they got to tell you that something else is going on at Florida State, right? Now, Fisher's relationship, According to The Ringer, Fisher's relationship with the program took a turn this fall that began in September when the starting quarterback, DeAndre Francois, went down with a season-ending patella injury in the opener against Alabama, casting doubt on the team's 2017 outlook. It continued in October when Fisher engaged in a verbal altercation with the fan after a 31-28 defeat at Louisville. It intensified a week later when the Seminoles lost 35-3 at Boston College, and it crested on Wednesday when Fisher was confronted by another fan during his weekly radio broadcast. The fan asked Fisher about his loyalty to his 5-16 and was promptly escorted out of the venue. Wow. Now, it's funny because just this past Wednesday, just this past Wednesday, I was at an event. This past Friday was World AIDS Day, and I work. I do work in the world of HIV/AIDS prevention. So just this past Friday, was December 1st, and every December 1st was World AIDS Day. So within my city in Tallahassee for World AIDS Day, we have a week long celebration of World AIDS events. So Tuesday, we had a event about HIV/AIDS and aging at a hotel here in Tallahassee, and coincidentally, our event was right across the hall from the Jimbo Fisher show. So I didn't get a chance to sit and watch the whole show and really listen to what Jimbo was saying because I was at my own event, but I did get a chance to peek my head in, and I was kind of in and out, and I got a couple pictures of the event and everything that's going on now. They'll be into the post, but nevertheless, it was before Jimbo took the actual job, before he announced that he took the job to Texas A&M. Matter of fact, I think it was the day before he announced that he was going to Texas A&M. Now, just wanted to add that piece because I was right across from Jim. I didn't get a chance to talk to him. I saw his little comb over, had his little shoes on with no socks on and stuff. Jimbo looked like he just got through swimming or something. Like he just got through swimming, and he had to hurry up and put an outfit on. And he put an outfit on and went to his interview. But Fisher's tenure at Florida State coincided with a number of investigations into the program, variously focusing on academic fraud, criminal misconduct, and multiple allegations of sexual assault against former Seminoles quarterback Winston. He was never charged, and lawsuits against him were later settled out of court or dismissed. And while Fisher has been linked to other high-profile coaching vacancies, most notably at LSU, his job status in Tallahassee always seems secure, and it always is. It was always secure. At some point, though, a relationship between coach and administration can grow too fraught to continue, and that appears to have been the case. A recent Tallahassee Democrat story noted how Fisher and Seminoles Booster Incorporated President Andy Miller just don't like each other, and school president John Thrasher told the paper that there's always personal dynamics in play in these situations. Thrasher added, what's been widely perceived as a jab at Fisher, this structure has been in place since the Boosters was founded. It has served us well, and I don't see any issues that resemble adults could not work through. How many football coaches have we had in the last 40 years? Fisher didn't coach Florida State's game against Louisiana Monroe. And whatever bowl game that they go to, they're probably going to the Preparation H Booty Cream Bowl to play your local high school. They're probably going to a bowl. Bowl game probably going to be next week in the Zephyr Hills 40-pack bottled water bowl. But I don't know. But nevertheless, Jimbo Fisher is gone, and Florida State is without a head coach. Now, I do think, like I say, we just talk about football-wise, if we take out the administration, we just talk about football-wise. To me, Jimbo Fisher leaving Florida State is like you leaving your good girlfriend for a chick that's eyed and ratchet. You know what I'm saying? Because Texas A&M is that always almost spot. I just, Texas A&M is a good spot. I do understand the school has more money to offer than Florida State has to offer. Florida State has been hesitant on building facilities, expanding things. They just built indoor facilities not too long ago. So, I don't know. I think that Florida State has some work to do in getting themselves a head coach. I do think that it's just very interesting. It is. It's just very interesting. I didn't believe that it would happen. I really didn't. I really didn't expect it. Until I saw the money. When I saw $75 million guaranteed over 10 years, I was like, Jimbo gone. Comb-over is gone. Jimbo not standing for the state. That $75 million is taking him out the door. And I always know about issues with the administration. Now, I will say, this 6-6 season does not mean that Florida State is done forever. I do have a problem with you disloyal fans and you people turning your back on the program now because going 6-6 and you lost your coach. It's freaking Florida State. Start acting like you have a tradition of damn winning. You are a traditionally powerhousing, winning, you say I had to hang on there, but you're a winning program. Act like it. You're going to get another coach in who can do some things. Now you won't get another Jimbo. Jimbo is one of the top five coaches. You're not going to get another Jimbo, but you will get somebody who can do some things. Now, I would love to see Charlie Strong as Florida State's head coach. I would love to see Charlie Strong as Florida State's head coach. That would personally make me happy. Will Florida State have a black head coach? I don't know. I do believe Florida State will have a black head coach way before the University of Florida have a black head coach. And from my understanding, University of Florida has hired Dan Mullen to be their new head coach because they want to turn around the offensive woes down there in Gainesville that Jim McElwain could not turn around. I'm going to tell me a little on though. But so Dan Mullen is at University of Florida. Jimbo Fisher is at Texas A&M. And Florida State is the program without the head coach. Like I said, the coach from Oregon is a top candidate, from my understanding. Willie Taggart. Willie Taggart is supposed to be the top candidate. Kevin Sumlin's name has been sprinkled in there as well as Charlie Strong. Now, Willie Taggart is a good coach. So I wouldn't be mad if they had Willie Taggart. I would not be mad if Willie Taggart became Florida State's head coach. I would love Charlie Strong to be Florida State's head coach, but I doubt Charlie Strong probably dip on South Florida like that. And I don't know how far up Charlie Strong is really on Florida State's list of coaches to actually go after and acquire, but we do know that Willie Taggart, Oregon's current head coach, is reportedly the leading candidate to take over the job at Florida State. I think Jimbo was making $3 million, $4 million a year, and he'll be making $7 million now. So that's a great increase, a great increase from what he was getting at Florida State. So yeah, there it is, Jimbo gone. Florida State fans, what you gonna do? I know you're a little salty. Let me say this, because I'm scrolling through social media last night, and I'm seeing Florida State fans actually trying to have jokes. Yes, Miami did get drugged by Clemson, but your whole season was trash. Florida State fans, stop acting like y'all Boston College fans. Stop acting like, not all Florida State fans, but a couple of you, y'all really got jokes. Yeah, Miami got drugged in an ACC championship game, but what the hell were you? You had to play Louisiana Monroe to become bowl eligible. You have no room for jokes. You had to play Louisiana Monroe to become bowl eligible. You had to reschedule this game back to your schedule. That was redundant. You had to reschedule this game. So, because you knew it was a guaranteed victory, that would give you 6 wins so you can go to a bowl game. And you have the gumption to have jokes. Yes, Miami did not show up in this game. But you all, your team quit on the season after they figured out that their quarterback was hurt. So I'm going to just throw that out there. I ain't going to spend too much time on it, but I'm just throw that out there. But further in Florida State news, as we talk about Florida State taking more L's on and off the field, their current kicker, Ricky Aguayo, a couple days ago, he got jumped by some dudes on Florida State campus. He got jumped, and there's video of him in some weak-ass fight with some fraternity members because they're talking junk about Florida State in the season. And so apparently Florida State's tight end, Ryan Izzo, came to his aid to try to help him because I saw a little bit of the video. I didn't really watch the whole video. It was one of the weak-ass white boy fights. He getting jumped on by between 3 and 5 people, and he ain't getting stomped out. They can't fight. I just thought it was funny to talk about. So Guayo told police he was jumped at about 3 a.m. on December 2nd after members of the fraternity heckled him about missing 2 field goals during the 2016 rivalry win over the Gators. Aguayo and another man faced off in the streets while a crowd of people cheered him on, and I saw that part. And somebody said, "Hey, Aguayo, fuck him up, bro." And one man yells, "What do you want? They're talking junk. What do you say you want to do fucking on our campus when you a fucking kicker?" So it's just a whole bunch of white boys throwing insults and stuff back and forth. So during the fight, Izzo comes in and pushes people away from Aguayo before the two leave the scene. The video follows reports by the Tallahassee Democrat on Tuesday about the fight and another incident 2 months later in which the same football players were accused of burglary and killing the turtle of a neighbor. The video follows report. Hold on, let me read this again because I ain't know about this. Hold on. The video follows reports by the Tallahassee Democrat on Tuesday about the fight and incident 2 months later in which the same football players, Aguayo and Izzo, were accused of burglary and killing the turtle of a neighboring fraternity. What? Hold on. Aguayo and Izzo, they turtle killers? So they fight, what? This is some crazy white boy stuff. Crazy white boy stuff. So Aguayo get in the fight. I will watch the video. There's a video of it. I watched the video. The video is hilarious. It's a white boy fight. And but I didn't know these boys was killing turtles. What? It just FSU just taking a whole bunch of L's this year. FSU must have been hanging out with Meek Mill. Because they're just taking all types of L's this year. Lose your quarterback, season go down the drain, you lose your coach, and now you're kicking your tight end, getting in fights, breaking in people's apartments, and killing turtles. Yeah. It's not a good year for Florida State. So, I guess I can't be mad at the Florida State fans for their jokes and all of the heckling that they're doing to the Miami fans. Because I guess you got to get it where you can get it when you got to stoop to killing turtles. Yeah. So, I'm going to move on. Cause that took a turn that I wasn't expecting to take. That these boys are killing goddamn turtles. White boy stuff. Alright, let me move on. Alright, so I hadn't talked about this before, but I felt like I want to talk about it now. So the Buffalo Bills, their quarterback Tyrod Taylor, a couple weeks ago was benched for the Buffalo Bills backup quarterback. And in the game that the backup quarterback came in and started, he threw 5 interceptions. Tyrod Taylor, out of 32 quarterbacks, is, well, actually 34 quarterbacks, he's ranked 17th best. He's ahead of Blake Bortles, Cam Newton, Phillip Rivers, Josh McCown, Carson Palmer, Brett Hundley, Eli Manning, Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston, Jacoby Brissett, Jay Cutler, Jay Flacco, Trevor Siemian, Brian Hoyer, C.J. Beathard, Deshaun Kizer, and Mitchell Trubisky. He's ahead of all of them. There, you have people like Derek Carr, Jared Goff, Alex Smith, Kirk Cousins, Drew Brees, Big Ben, Marcus Mariota, Matthew Stafford, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, Matt Ryan, Tom Brady, Carson Wentz, Case Keenum, and Deshaun Watson, who are ahead of him as far as total QBR. Tyrod Taylor's total QBR is 52, which is middle of the pack. Now, I'm saying this because he was benched for the backup quarterback, and I feel like the benching is unwarranted. Yes, he had 2 bad games leading up to the benching, but let's look at his stats. Tyrod Taylor did not deserve to be benched, but I'm saying this because black quarterbacks have a smaller margin of error in the NFL. Black quarterbacks get the short end of the stick. Black quarterbacks, they are not allowed to make mistakes and grow the same way white quarterbacks are in the NFL. And it's always been an issue. Now, remember, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, quarterbacks like Tyrod Taylor were not valued. They would have tried to turn Tyrod Taylor into a DB or wide receiver or running back or something like that. Okay, now, running quarterbacks who have the ability to run are getting the chance, are getting the shine. And Tyrod Taylor has been good because the Buffalo Bills are 6-5. So they are a winning team. I think they are in the playoff mix. The Buffalo Bills are in the playoff mix. He has a QB rating. Now, his total QBR is 55. But his QB passer rating, Tyrod Taylor, is 91. He only has 3 interceptions, has 12 touchdowns. He's a 64% passer. He has 2,023 passing yards on the season, which is not horrible, which is not bad, which is definitely does not deserve a benching. And I'm just wondering if Tyrod Taylor, well, I'm not wondering. I do know. If Tyrod Taylor was white, he wouldn't have got benched. If Tyrod Taylor was white, he would have got ample chances to play. Now, the Buffalo Bills were forced to put him back into the start lineup because they realized their backup quarterback was hot garbage. And then realizing that quarterback was hot garbage, he threw 5 picks and they lost the game. And the Buffalo Bills did lose some positioning within the AFC East because now the Patriots are back on top. And matter of fact, the Bills play the Patriots next at Buffalo. They play today actually at 1 p.m. in Buffalo. So in an hour they play. So Tyrod Taylor was benched, in my opinion, because black quarterbacks always get the short end of the stick. And it's something that has always been there. The margin for error is smaller. Blake Bortles can stink it up, right? Blake Bortles can stink it up. Trevor Siemian can stink it up. Not Phillip Rivers, but Josh McCown can stink it up. Eli Manning can stink it up. Andy Dalton can stink it up. Jay Cutler can stink it up and still get another chance. Trevor Siemian, Brian Hoyer, like these quarterbacks can stink it up, but they get more chances. Now, Tyrod is not the best quarterback in the league, but he's damn sure not the worst. But he damn sure didn't deserve to be benched by the Buffalo Bills. And the Buffalo Bills cost themselves a victory by benching their quarterback. But it just brings to light that black quarterbacks and black players and things don't get really, depending on your position, don't really get the fair shake that other players who are white will get, especially other quarterbacks who are white, they get more chances at error than black quarterbacks do. So you could be a white quarterback that's not good and still not get benched as fast as a black quarterback who's good will. Just think about that. So a little more fuel on the fire for us to be able to start our own league, for us to want to start our own league and everything like that. But just another shake in, like, the things that black quarterbacks have to do. Like, when you talk about systematic oppression and the way that things happen, but just the way that things are ran when black people are not seen as important or as smart. Like, the black quarterback has never been seen as smart as the white quarterback is traditionally in the NFL, or as capable. And this is just another example of things being shown that black quarterback still not being respected in the same manner as the white quarterback is. If you give the black quarterback a chance, he'll show you what he can do. Now, even in that, giving him his chance, if we had our own league, we wouldn't have to be given a chance because we create our own chances. Remember, kings and bosses and leaders create our own opportunities. I want to remember that. But just dropping a little dime on you about what's going on in the NFL, because, you know, I got further NFL news, but black quarterbacks never got the fair shake, the fair things. Like Colin Kaepernick, like when he was benched, Colin Kaepernick, even last year, he shouldn't have been benched, right? He shouldn't have been benched. Yes, Colin Kaepernick was the greatest. Colin Kaepernick shouldn't even been cut. He shouldn't have been cut. His play was not bad enough for him to be cut. But nevertheless, he was cut. So black quarterbacks don't get the same shape that other quarterbacks or white quarterbacks get. So, now, moving further on to talk about how I'm talking about black quarterbacks. I'm going to extend this conversation to talk about how black people in the realm of athletics don't get the same fair chances as white people do, because rolling into the firing of the head coach of the Memphis, or the former head coach of the Memphis Grizzlies, David Fizdale, he was fired just this past week. And some of the reports are talking about how Fizdale wasn't an adequate enough coach and his rift with player Mark Gasol. So basically they're trying to say Gasol got him fired. So let me read some information, read some of this article that I got from theundefeated.com. In case you missed the reports, the Memphis Grizzlies has an absentee owner, a second in command who has no basketball background whatsoever, a roster that just isn't that impressive, and a general manager who may or may not be responsible for actually assembling it. Yes, yet, last I checked, all of them, Robert Pera, the owner, Joe Albiti, second in command, and Chris Wallace, the general manager, still have their jobs, while David Fizdale is gone as head coach in Memphis. One could argue Fizdale is no innocent bystander. Such is the case when you indeed have a suspect roster. Okay, let's say that first. The roster is suspect. They're not that good. And they lost, Randolph. They lost Zach Randolph. So they lost Zach Randolph, but they do have Conley and Gasol, right? So their suspect roster, Fizdale's record at that point was 50-51. So it was one game below 500 as a coach. But you do got to give people time to grow. At that point, they're saying he alienated the best player, Mark Gasol. It's just a whole clusterfuck of things that's just going on over there in Memphis. But Memphis has a history of firing good coaches. The last two coaches before Fizdale were fired in the midst of trying to build something that was going on, that was growing, because we know the Grizzlies will be going to the playoffs. And the Grizzlies are not the best team in the West, but the Grizzlies are one of the best teams, and they're not the best, but they're one of the best teams in the West. And you can't just keep firing coaches, because you know you don't. The Grizzlies never had the talent that the Golden State Warriors or the Thunder or the Spurs have had. I always thought that the Grizzlies were a couple players short of, you know, being put over the top. You know, they Lionel Hollins was fired. So, and then David Georger, Georger was fired after four consecutive trips to the playoffs. Lionel Hollins was fired after taking the Grizzlies to the Western Conference Finals. And that he was fired 15 games into the next season, after the previous year of the Grizzlies going into the Western Conference Finals. Then David Georger was fired after four consecutive trips to the playoffs with the Grizzlies. And there's no stability in Memphis. Memphis Grizzlies are the FAMU Rattlers of the basketball world, because there's no stability from top to bottom. No owner, no second in command who know what they're doing, no coach, no stability. You lost Randolph. The roster ain't that good in the Memphis Grizzlies, so they decided to get rid of Fizdale, who's a good coach. Fizdale will get another job, but I just thought that was a bad move. And if Fizdale was white, would he have gotten fired? I do know that the New Orleans Pelicans have adequate enough talent down there, and they're not really winning like they're supposed to, but they coach this day. But I'm not going to throw no other coaches under the bus. But what I am going to ask is, if Fizdale was white, would he still have his job? I think Fizdale would still have his job if he was white. I do. Now, not winning as many games does not help. But you have to give coaches a chance to goddamn go and build these programs and build these teams up. And the Grizzlies are not doing it. And because the Grizzlies are not doing that, they're always going to be that team that is good but could have been better. They could have been better. They could have done some other things. But they're always reaching for that next splash coach and overlooking the good coaches that they have. Because the Memphis Grizzlies are not a garbage organization. You can always expect the Memphis Grizzlies to be in the mix when we're talking about the playoff hunt. But not like this. And not this year, apparently, since you got rid of Fizdale. And then Gasol acting like a little punk. Gasol and Fizdale never really got along. And they butted heads. And a lot of people are saying Gasol is one of the reasons that Fizdale is being fired. All in all, we know the staff and the administration had the final call, and this is the decision they made. And once again, the Memphis Grizzlies will—I don't know who they're gonna find as a coach, but will they be able to be better than the last three coaches that you just had? Because apparently, y'all don't know what y'all want to do with your coaches. If you want the results of the Spurs and the Warriors. If you want that, get the players. You need to get the players. You got to get the talent. You got to get people in there who know how to go after the talent. You can't just keep firing coaches because you can't get your talent in there. There's a whole structural thing that's going wrong in Memphis that y'all don't really have a good pulse on. Get some people in there who know what they're doing. Because you got a team who can do some things. But I don't know. Maybe I do think Memphis's window has closed. I do think their window to taking that next step to that next level has closed. So we're going to see We're going to see what goes on in the future in Memphis. But I just want to put that, you know, get you thinking. But, you know, when you're black and you're in realms where white men are in charge, you have to work twice as hard. But when you're black and you control what goes on around you, you don't have to kid yourself to work twice as hard. So we've been saying it for the NFL, we said it for the NBA too. We can own our own. We can control our own. We can own our own. We don't have to have these type of conversations. But in the meantime, we are going to bring light to things that's going on. I do think that black coaches, black players, black people within the realm of sports don't get a fair shake. Not compared to the white players, white coaches, white administrators, and things like that. So, you know. Dave, man, keep your head up. You're going to get your job. And you're going to show these fools that you're a good coach. So keep your head up, man. Keep your head up. Don't even trip. Don't even trip, Dave Fizdale. Don't even trip because people don't know what the hell they doing. Memphis, remember, Memphis don't have their stuff together, Dave. Memphis as an organization up top don't have their stuff together. So don't even trip. You will find yourself another job. As crazy a move as that was that Memphis made, don't even trip. So, I want to make a transition now. Let me make a little transition into some college football. So, I want to give a little recap on college football because this past week was like basically the championship week where we had our conference championship games. And a lot of these games helped to determine who will be into the top four of the college football final. And that program is actually starting now. Starts at 12 o'clock on Sunday. So it's starting now. So we will find out who made the top four very, 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 very soon. We're going to keep an eye on that. And if everything comes out, we'll give you live updates. So, but to recap, so the Pac-12 championship was between USC and Stanford. And in a hard-fought close game, USC came out on top with a 31-28 victory last Friday, December 1st, over the Stanford Cardinals. And that puts USC at 11-2 on the season, and that gives them the Pac-12 championship. Now, that to me, that does not help USC make the top four. They may make a New Year's Six bowl game, but they're not going to make the top four. And I'll come back. So, ACC championship. Clemson walked the dog on Miami. The turnover chain was a non-factor. What have I been saying? Miami's offense has to do something. Miami offense ran into a buzzsaw of what is Clemson's defense and was totally dominated. And Clemson came out with the 38-3 victory over the Miami Hurricanes, who only put up a field goal in the fourth quarter to give them their 3 points. Clemson came to play. Miami's defense could only do so much. Miami's offense was—they did not show up. The wide receivers were just dropping passes, like two straight series. It was turnovers. The ball hit the receiver right in the hands. He dropped the ball, and it was caught for interception. The drive before that, the wide receiver number four caught the ball trying to make moves, sloppily holding the ball away from his body. The cornerback number 16 punched the ball out. It was a fumble. Miami just couldn't get together. Their offense was horrid. Granted, Miami did have injuries coming in, but the offense just couldn't get anything moved. So they were dominated. 38-3 in the ACC championship. And that puts Clemson at the number one spot. So we know, bam, Clemson is number one in the college football playoffs. All right, so the SEC championship. Georgia defeats Auburn 28-7 to give them the victory in the SEC championship, and that, to me, that gives them the number three seed in the college football playoff. I did not get a chance to see this game, but so I'll come back and give you some scores and things. Oklahoma defeats TCU again, 41-17, giving them the Big 12 championship, and in my opinion, the second seed in the college football playoff. Ohio State defeats Wisconsin 27-21, giving them the Big Ten championship and a chance at the number four seed in the college football playoff. Now, the question is it Alabama or Ohio State? Now, UCF caps off their undefeated season, going 12-0 and defeating Memphis, who was 10-1 coming into the game, 62-55, giving them the American Athletic Conference Championship. So UCF will be in the New Year's Six bowl game, and who else? And they might play. I don't know who they'll play, but UCF will crash the New Year's Six bowl game. So let's give you some scores and highlights and things like that. I'm talking about highlights. This shit audio. I'm talking about highlights. Give me some scores. I mean some stats. Statistics. Damn it, Joseph. Say statistics. All right. So USC Stanford. Sam Darnold, who was a Heisman hopeful at the beginning of the season, he went 17-24, 325 yards, 2 touchdowns in his victory. Had a 94.5% passer rating. KJ Costello for Stanford went 10-22, 192 yards, 2 touchdowns. As a team, USC racked up 176 rushing yards with 2 touchdowns. Stanford, who was known for running the ball, only had 151 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. So, USC's leading receiver was Pittman Jr., who had 7 receptions for 146 yards and 1 touchdown. And T. Vaughn's had 3 receptions for 26 yards, who added the second touchdown. Mitchell Jr. for USC had 2 receptions for 66 yards. Stanford, Ortega White, I think is his name, had 2 receptions for 87 yards, and K. Smith had 4 receptions for 80 yards. K. Smith had the 2 touchdowns, though. But Stanford just didn't have enough for USC, and USC pulled it out with the victory to leave with the Pac-12 championship. Now, Clemson, Miami. Clemson straight dominated Miami. So Mike Rozier went 14-29, 110 passing yards, 2 picks. Kelly Bryant went 23-29, 252 yards, 1 touchdown. 23-29, he only had 6 incompletions for the whole game. That's amazing. Clemson had 254 total rushing yards. Kelly Bryant had 252 rushing yards. Clemson had 254 total passing yards. I'm sorry. Clemson as a team had 77 rushing yards, while Miami had 104 rushing yards. That's amazing. But Clemson had 77 rushing yards, but just the points off turnovers and things like that. And just Miami couldn't stop Clemson passing the ball. Miami just couldn't stop Clemson on offense. And Miami couldn't generate anything on offense to get them some points. The offense just couldn't. It just couldn't get going. It just couldn't get going. Right? So, like I say, that sets up the college football playoff, right? So, Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia, and is it Ohio State or is it Alabama? So, Alabama's best wins are LSU, Mississippi State. Ohio State's best wins, they have this victory over Wisconsin. I think they have their Michigan State victory. And who was Ohio State's third? Because Ohio State has three good wins. And Alabama has 2 good wins. Now, Ohio State has that loss against Iowa. Alabama's loss against Auburn isn't as bad. So I would put Bama in. I'm not going to lie. My top 4 is Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Bama. I couldn't forgive Ohio State for that Iowa loss and then, you know, the Big Ten and stuff like that. I just couldn't forgive them that. So I would put Bama in over Ohio State. Bama didn't win their conference championship, but the only loss was against an Auburn team who did make it to the conference championship, who lost to the eventual conference champions, who was the University of Georgia, even though Ohio State did win that conference championship, their losses to me are worse than Alabama's losses. So that's just me. I would put Ohio State in over Alabama. So that's me. That's my college football recap, and that's my top four. Now, let me clear up some things just in case I was misunderstood. Last week, I talked about Gabby Douglas and the sexual assault cases with the Dr. Nassar being charged with sexual assault against the girls of the U.S. Olympic team. Now, Gabby Douglas put out a statement basically saying that no matter what a woman wears, she should not be harassed or abused for what she has on. Now, that was a rebuttal statement to, or a follow-up statement to what Gabby said earlier. So let me give you the whole rundown. So Gabby, in talking about what happened with Allie Raisman, Gabby tweeted, "However, it is our responsibility as women to dress modestly and be classy. Dressing in a provocative sexual way entices the wrong crowd." Now, that was a bad choice of words by Gabby. She is speaking truth, but that is a bad choice of words. So let me explain what I'm saying. Gabby is speaking to a truth of when a woman wears sexy clothing or clothing that's perceived as being sexy, she will garner attention from some fuckboys. Fuckboys gonna come out and show their fuckboys, right? And so that's not an excuse for them being fuckboys. But fuckboys gonna be fuckboys in those situations, right? So they see a woman in something that they feel is scantily clad, they're gonna take advantage and say, "Hey, well, she shouldn't have been wearing that." Now, Gabby, you chose a horrible choice of words to get your point across because the wrong crowd is invited because of the pervasive culture of rape that continues to be passed down from generation to generation in America. And so, Allie Raisman said, "We're all in this together. If we're going to create change, I need your help." And that's when Gabby Douglas put out the statement that I read last week, talking about, let me just make this clear. No matter what a woman wears, she should not be harassed or anything because of her clothing. And then Simone Biles comes in and says, shocked me that I'm saying this, but it doesn't surprise me. Honestly, saying this brings me to tears because as your teammate, I expected more from you to support her. I support you, Allie, and all other women out there. Stay strong." Now, that remember, Douglas came out and said, "I didn't correctly word my reply, and I'm deeply sorry for coming off like I didn't stand alongside my teammates, regardless of what you wear. Abuse under any circumstances is never acceptable. I am with you. Hashtag me too," she posted on Twitter. Now, I see why Simone Biles said what she said. But my question in Simone Biles saying what she's saying, what do you mean by when you said it doesn't surprise you? And I do think Simone Biles is kind of off cold with the way she's saying some things. It's a way to say things. It's a way for people to talk to each other. And for me, you know me, I'm a black first person. And you know me how I feel about violence against women as well. I talk about it often on this. We have to find a better way to communicate with each other. Simone and Gabby and all of them, they should pick up the phone and talk to each other. Pick up the phone and call each other and talk to each other before y'all go to social. We live in a generation where people race to social media and they put things out. And then when they put things out, it's not exactly what they meant, but you said it now. And so since you said it, it's out there. Now, I do think Gabby's second response should have cleared things up. But Simone Biles came out and, "Well, you did this," and Simone was kind of off cold and kind of out of character with some of the things. I ain't going to say out of character because I don't know, but kind of, you know, out of left field with some of the things she said. But what does that mean when you say it doesn't surprise me? Is that to the overall culture of rape, or are you talking directly to Gabby? Do you and Gabby have some kind of background beef, anything. And remind you, Simone Biles is also a young lady who, when Gabby Douglas was being drugged through the mud by the media, or not the media, but the black community, about the hell, Simone Biles never did come to her defense in that. So, you know, I'm just throwing that piece out. I'm not trying to start no shit. I'm just throwing facts and things out. But what I will say is, y'all find a better way to do this. Y'all find it's okay to speak up and speak out. But if it's something towards somebody else, find a better way to do this stuff. Call your homegirl up or talk to your homegirl. Because stuff got lost in translation. And Gabby, I can see why some people would be mad at what you're saying. But me, I try to always look at it from different angles and try to dig into the deep truth of what's really, really going on about the situation. And your second statement says a lot about what you really meant, but your first statement is so horribly worded that people will take that and run with it. So, Gab, y'all got to do better. Y'all have to do better in the way that you all are communicating. But the object is to not throw each other under the bus either. And I do kind of feel like Simone kind of trying to, kind of throwing Gabby under the bus a little bit on this. I do. A little bit. Now, Gabby's statement opened the door for that. Yeah, I will say that. Gabby's statement did open the door for that. But you don't have to step through it. And you know how women, they trying to be that super person. I stand up against these things, and you know, people, you know how people choose to take a stand when they want to, because stuff be happening to black women all the time that nobody says anything about. Like, things happen to black women, horrible things happen to black women all the time. Nobody, and even Simone Biles and Gabby Douglas and Allie Race and all, they don't say anything about it. So, you know, I'm just throwing that piece out there too. Just throwing that piece out there, too. So, I want to move on. I want to talk about Kevin Durant's epiphany about being black in America. That's the headline from the MercuryNews.com. So, Kevin Durant had a sit-down interview with, what's the gentleman's name? Logan Murdoch. And in this interview, Kevin Durant is talking about things that he's finally come to understand about race in America. And he also made a statement that him playing basketball has helped him to avoid systematic oppression in America. Now, I'm going to speak to that, and then I'm going to read you. I'm not going to read you the whole article, but I'm going to read pieces of the article, of the interview, and then kind of break it down. So let me just say this, Kevin, and this is a teachable moment. No matter how much money you have, and they keep telling you, even the story of OJ, they tell you, no matter how much money you have as a black person in America, the system of white supremacy and oppression does not give a damn about how much money you have. You're still a nigga. You need to remember that. And your basketball ability has not allowed you to avoid systematic oppression, but it has created some kind of comfort and some kind of shield from some aspects of systematic oppression, because white men have interest in you. They have money invested in you. And always remember that. If these people had no money invested in you, you would not have that, the little shield that you have. And I do say little shield that you have, because no amount of money and basketball ability will keep you from being treated like a nigga in this country. Will not keep you from being a victim of systematic oppression. Now, I juxtapose my life. I have never faced a lot of things that a lot of black people have faced in this country. And I have not made nowhere near the money you have made, Kevin. But I do understand that systematic oppression exists. I'm in an arena, an area where, especially with me doing African history and things like that, that puts me in a place where some people don't like what I do. But I'm also in other realms where the work that I do puts me in a place to where I'm not going to experience a lot of stuff that a lot of poor black people will experience. I'm not going to experience that. But I do know damn well that systematic racism exists, and I know that I'm not totally shielded from it. I'm not shielded from it, neither are you, Kevin. So I do want to say that. So Kevin says, finally waking up, to be honest, just kind of seeing how rough it is for the average black man. You know what I'm saying? And on top of that, a black man makes one mistake, I see how far we get pushed down. For me, I kind of grew up in this basketball world where my talent kind of overrides what I look like. I don't have it as rough when it comes to that, as far as social or systematic oppression or any social issues. They didn't really apply to me because I could put a ball in the basket. Just me saying that kind of woke me up a little bit, like, damn, is that all I'm good for? Like, if I wasn't a basketball player, what kind of man would they look at me as? You know what I'm saying, Kevin? But that's true. If these people didn't have this money invested in you because of your talent, you wouldn't be looked at as that. That's a fact. In terms of what value I can bring to you outside of playing basketball, I bring a lot of value to people as far as how I treat them, how I encourage them, and how I just try to be a good person to them. I fear there's a lot of black men that have those traits, but they often get stereotyped or judged off of one incident or not given a second chance, which is true. So if I find something that's empowering to people that look like me, I just try to send a subtle message that I got your back and I hear you, and I try to inspire you as much as I can from just being in this world as a black man coming up, even though I was looked at and viewed a little differently for it. But I'm still a black man. I understand where you're coming from. And so Logan Murdoch goes on to ask, when you first signed here, you sat down on the Bill Simmons show and talked about how people only see you for one thing. And KD says, anything involving basketball with us is such a huge deal. And then you hear stories of how players want to stand up for what they believe in, stand up for social justice, systematic oppression. You see what's going on with Meek Mill right now, which is effing ridiculous. He's actually doing something great with himself. He's helping people. He's building a better life. He's putting on a better life for him and his family. And you see how people do him. I start to pay attention to more things and things like that. And even he goes on further in the interview to talk about what's going on with Colin Kaepernick. Now, these, like I said, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but Kevin Durant has come into a realization that systematic oppression is real in America, and having some kind of money, status, or ability can somewhat shield you from what the average black person will experience, but it's not going to totally keep you safe. It's not going to totally allow you to avoid oppression and being viewed as a nigger in this world, because that's what America is about. And when they no longer need you, Kevin, you will see that. And remember, it doesn't totally shield you, because look at Colin Kaepernick. If being a professional athlete and having these exceptional abilities totally shielded you, Colin Kaepernick would have never been cut from the 49ers in the first place. Because like I said earlier, Colin Kaepernick was not cut because of his play. He was not cut because of his play, because he was better than half the quarterbacks in the league at the end of the season. So he was not cut because of his play. And he cannot get a job now because of his play, because of these abilities. Cannot get a job because of what he's taken stand for. So your blackness will never be totally shielded from the throes and things of white supremacy. And this is a good learning. This is a good thing that Kevin Durant is learning. He goes on to say, I feel for those people who don't know what they're passionate about and don't have any true inspiration around them, true role models to look at. That's why I feel like it's so important for me to represent where I come from, because for kids, just to say, you know, he walked on the same streets I walked on. He playing on TV. He's on the cover of GQ. People know who he is. He out there actually doing something he loves every day in front of millions of people. I know for sure that it inspires somebody. Even if they don't play ball, even if they're just trying to look for a way out of Maryland or to get out of PG County. Well, I got somebody who did. We're seeing it every day, and it makes me just walk around with pride. And yes, you did get out. And remind the kids that they have a brain as well, and you don't have to just have athletic ability to get out because you have a brain. That also speaks more to the environment and the adults in the environment, but also adults, more black men like myself, more black men who become successful, who've made it out. Get your asses back in those goddamn communities and help those goddamn kids get out. Get back in those communities and get active in these communities to show these children that you can be anything you want to be, and using your mind will take you further than any athletic ability will. I'm not mad at people who get out because of sports. But what I'm mad at is that our kids have the perception that sports is the only way out. And I'm not saying that Kevin is saying that, but Kevin just made me think about that, because most kids only want to be athletes because they feel like that's the only way it is the way to get out. But I'm glad that Kevin is realizing that systematic racism is real. The interviewer asked him, what was he first intrigued about Colin Kaepernick? He said, "I just love the way he just did it. It was really out of nowhere for the casual person, casual fan. I'm sure people that he was close to kind of seeing it coming, but for us, it was just like, whoa. He shocked everybody doing that. The backlash he got from it immediate." Yeah, I yawned. So what? What did you think when you saw it? So the interviewer is asking Kevin Durant, what did he think when he saw Kaepernick taking a stand? You see, he just touched something in people that we didn't know was there. I posted a picture of him on my Instagram, and the comments under that were ridiculous. The stuff people were asking about him over that was ridiculous. He brought something out of people they'd been hiding for a long, long time that needed to be revealed. I'd rather you tell me that you don't like me because of my skin than hide that shit. So he kind of touched the nerve, and the outrage from it made a fan of him just because made me a Kevin Durant saying the outrage made him a fan of Kaepernick just because he decided to take all of that on, but also tell a message of, yo man, just treat us fair, just treat us equal. We're people too, we're not less than you because we don't look like you. But once again, KD, that goes further into showing you why being a professional athlete will not totally protect you or shield you from systematic oppression. It may give you somewhat of a shield or even an illusion of a shield, but you will not be totally free from systematic oppression. Just the fact that you have to play for white men to become a basketball player, people who allow you to express your talent, shows you right there what's going on. They are allowing you to show your talent. They're allowing you to do that. So that's just insight into what's going on in the world of sports. Kevin Durant, systematic oppression, all those things. He's coming to the realization of what things are going on, and he's saying that moving to Oakland helped him realize some things. He's saying moving into the Bay, this is about him moving to the Bay Area. I just knew about the Black Panthers, and I knew about so many great intelligent minds. He says he know about so many great, great, intelligent minds, always influenced by the Bay. Influenced by Oakland, influenced by Vallejo, San Francisco, every part of the Bay. From hip-hop culture, music culture, rock and roll, to athletes, to politicians, everything is influenced by the Bay. It has its own style. I knew that, but as far as just coming out here and really feeling free, feeling like you could be yourself, feeling like you can love whatever you want to love and not be judged for it and not be ridiculed for it. I feel like everybody should want to feel that way. Everybody should want to be in that atmosphere. That's what America's all about. Being out here makes me feel that way. Like I said, I'm not going to go deep into the whole article. It's a long article. But Kevin Durant is coming into some realization that systematic oppression is real. Systematic oppression happens to black people, to the everyday black person. But he also needs to understand that he's not totally shielded from systematic oppression. It is something that it's not going to affect him the same way as it's going to affect me, because people have invested millions of dollars into him. And because they've invested millions of dollars into him, they will not allow certain things to happen. So, now it's time for my weekly rant. And the victims of my weekly rant this week will be Anquan Boldin and Malcolm Jenkins. And it hurts my heart to give Anquan the business, but Anquan has to get the business. So the NFL just committed $89 million to social justice. The NFL just committed $89 to combating social injustices, and my quotation marks in the air. And it's hoping that this will cause the players to stop taking a knee during the games, right? So Eric Reed confirmed that the NFL's $89 million commitment to social justice causes isn't as directly positive a move as it might seem, telling The Slate on Thursday that the league presented players with a plan to make the donation by diverting money from other charitable ventures like breast cancer awareness and the month-long celebration of the military that is Salute the Service. Reed left the Players Coalition. He left the coalition, so the Players Coalition that was organized by Malcolm Jenkins and I think Anquan Boldin, he left that group. And the group that's been negotiating with the league in light of the national anthem protest earlier the week, he left the group. He wasn't the only one. Other players left the group as well. Earlier reporting by Slate indicated that Reed was asked if he'd stop protesting during the anthem if the league made the donation. Just the day after the story ran, one of the Players Coalition leaders, Malcolm Jenkins, announced that he ceased his own protest. So Malcolm Jenkins is saying he's going to stop throwing his fist up as long as the league get that money. And I just gave Malcolm Jenkins some shout-outs a couple weeks ago, so I take that back. Fuck you, Malcolm Jenkins. Sellout ass. Essentially, there was already plenty to imply that this donation wasn't the result of the NFL's earnest desire to help social justice causes. And Reed's interview makes it that much clearer. So, this is Reed. This is Eric Reed saying, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell is trying to make this as easy for the owners to agree to as possible so that, again, their goal is to end their protest, Reed said. He's trying to make it as easy as possible to do for the owners. He's going to present them with a good proposal saying, look, you really don't have to do anything. We're just going to shift this money from this area and just move it here. So, because people have been saying the NFL isn't doing anything to combat social injustices, the NFL is just going to shift money, hush money, and Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin are at the head of them getting this hush money, taking this hush money, and just going and just hushing and not protesting anymore, not taking a stand. So short-term thing, and we know the money won't really go to social justice causes, but Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan must be getting some money from that themselves, so they decided to sell out the other NFL players, like some old bitch-ass niggas that they are, further confirming that NFL players, the majority, a good number of NFL players are house niggas, and Anquan Boldin and Malcolm Jenkins are two of the leading house niggas in the NFL. The 49ers safety told Slate that the idea of moving the money away from other charitable causes was unacceptable to him and the other players who left the coalition, and the plan contributed to their decision to leave the group and stop negotiating with the league. Reed also confirmed that the person who had directly asked him to stop protesting was Malcolm Jenkins, whom he described as the one player who he knew had protested during the anthem and now accepted the NFL's proposal. Based on my understanding, every player who was actually protesting, aside from Jenkins, was not in agreement with this proposal, Reed told Slate. That leaves a remaining, I guess, 9 or so players who don't protest who are in agreement with the proposal. I think it's obvious that these 9 players are people who have not sacrificed their careers, who Malcolm is using as his backing to say the coalition is in agreement. Malcolm Jenkins is the biggest one, and then Anquan is in there. They ain't talking too much, but Anquan in that bitch too, right? And Anquan wasn't protesting, and Anquan is one of those 9 that they're talking about. The $89 million donation is a 7-year commitment. Bitch, social causes of black people have been going on since first contact of white people. It's not a fucking 7-year commitment. This commitment is built to include an annual contribution to both team owners and players. Reid further confirmed the prior reporting that a sizable chunk of the donation would not be earmarked for specific organizations or purposes, and rather would be spent at the discretion of a committee that would primarily be made up of those representing league and team office interests rather than players. In other words, the NFL asked players to stop protesting racial injustice in exchange for a charitable donation by the league, which is, on its own, at best, a gross misunderstanding of the players' motivation here, and at worst, a craven move to prioritize public image over all else, only for the charitable donation to be a result of money shuffled from one other charitable organization to another. With basically a whole bunch of hush money that Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin is the leading people who are getting the players or getting the league to get that, and that thing is happening. That's why Eric Reid and other players left the coalition, because the players decided to sell them out. Anquan and Malcolm Jenkins, you guys should be ashamed of yourselves. So the lives of black people mean nothing to you. The lives of black people mean nothing to you, basically. That's what that means. You guys have forgotten that you are black men in America. And you are saying that the lives of black people mean nothing to you as black men in America. That is sickening. That is ridiculous. That is repugnant. That is repulsive. That is insidious. That is stupid. You guys are examples of house niggas. In the NFL, you are the spitting examples of the house niggas that I've been talking about since show one. Thank you for showing your true colors of who you really are, because since the very first show that I've started, I've been talking about NFL players being house niggas, being the house niggas of the sporting world. And thank you for showing me what's really going on in the world of sports. You guys are fucking ridiculous. You're ridiculous. You make me sick. Y'all make me sick to my stomach. You make me sick to my stomach because you really don't understand what's going on. Like y'all really don't understand the seriousness and the long term effects and the long term problems that systematic oppression has brought to black people. The killing of our people is worth more than $89 million that's going to be spent at the discretion of old white men. Our community is worth more than $89 million that will be spent at the discretion of white men. You guys make me sick with this. You should be ashamed of yourselves. You are not good people for this. You are the house niggas of the league. You fucking sellouts. You backstabbers. You coons. You sambos. And I'm particularly disappointed with Anquan Boldin. And I shouldn't be. And that's the fan. That's me checking the fandom that is in me since I was a child, because I grew up looking at Anquan Boldin, and I thought Anquan was a good dude. Anquan has routinely got like NFL Walter Payton of the Year award, but we see Anquan just a good house nigga. So is Malcolm Jenkins. Y'all some fuck boys. Y'all some whole hoes out here. Whole hoes out here. And it's ridiculous that you are speaking for the players in the NFL. It's ridiculous that you guys are speaking for them, but the whole ass shit that you got going on, and that colonized mindset that you got going on. We have to be careful about who we choose as our role model. That's why it's hurting me so bad, because Anquan, I looked up Anquan growing up. From Tallahassee, he here in Florida State, I looked up Anquan. That's why we got to be more careful about who we choose as our role models. Fuck you, Anquan. Fuck you, Malcolm Jenkins, and fuck the rest of those players. One time for Eric Reid, who's a real black man, a real field Negro who stands up for what's going on and will not fall for $89 million. Anquan, Malcolm Jenkins, and the rest of y'all, Fuck y'all. Suck dick. Eat ass. Y'all some asshole. Fuck boys. Coochie hole. Whatevers. And fuck y'all. That's ridiculous. Y'all make me sick, Reed. That's ridiculous the way that you all accepted that. Knowing damn well that that's not going to stop social injustices or anything. So you basically gave the NFL an out. Y'all ridiculous. Y'all some holes for that. You some bitch ass niggas. And yeah, the black community needs to turn their back on you guys. We really do need to turn our back on you guys. Because y'all some bitch ass niggas for this shit. Fuck y'all. And that's all I got to say about that, my weekly rant. But before I wrap this show up, the college playoff Final Four has been revealed, and just like I thought, just what I said, Clemson is number one, Oklahoma is number two, Georgia is number three, and Alabama is number four. So that means that Alabama and Clemson will play in the Sugar Bowl, and Georgia and Oklahoma will play in the Rose Bowl. And those are the semifinal games leading up to the college football national championship game. Wisconsin and Ohio State. Well, Ohio State finished fifth and Wisconsin finished sixth. So, they're playing one of the New Year's Six games. It's one of them going to play UCF, or one of them play each other, or one of them will play UCF and somebody else. But, you know, Alabama made that number four spot. So, it is what it is. If you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you. Alabama is, they in there now. So, that's it. Hey, man, I'm Joseph Ward. This is The Fix. I had my rant. I had my yarns. And we got it in. We talked about some good things one time for Grambling. I wanted to make sure I clear up my thing about Gabby Douglas and everything, and talk about the Jimbo Fisher and Tyrod Taylor and Fizdale. I just think black players, black coaches, black administrators, and black people within the realm of sports get a bad end of the stick. They don't get a fair shake. They get fucked over. And, we're tired of telling our people that we have to work two or three times as hard as white people. It's time for us to stop doing that and build our own. And with that being said, man, I just want to let y'all know that I love y'all. I love being black. And it's time for us to do what we need to do for ourselves, man, and build up ourselves, the black community, man. I holla.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare, because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back, looks up, you can put it on the board, yes! Back to back, Jack! And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like